Radio Prague News.
The police have handed over to Austria two Iranians arrested on terrorism charges. The Czech president has emphasized cooperation between the Visegrad Four and Austria in talks with his Austrian counterpart. And scientists have issued a warning over bark beetle infestations. The police have handed over two Iranians arrested on terror charges to their Austrian counterparts. Czech migration police detained the pair at Prague airport a week ago. They are wanted over alleged membership of a terrorist cell, with an Iraqi man arrested in Vienna over unsuccessful train attacks in Germany. Austrian officials said they were suspected of links to Islamic State militants. The pair didn't contest their extradition to Austria. The man arrested in Vienna is accused of carrying out two attacks late last year. In one, a high-speed train hit a steel cable stretched across tracks between Nuremberg and Munich. The Czech president, Miloš Zeman, emphasized cooperation between the Visegrad Four and Austria in a meeting with his Austrian counterpart, Alexander van der Bellen, in Vienna on Wednesday. Mr. Zeman said that his host had been neutral on the Czech president's idea of a new canal linking the Danube, Elbe and Oder rivers. Mr. van der Bellen said the Czech Republic was Austria's most important partner in Central Europe, adding that the two states enjoyed excellent cultural and economic ties. He said that his country was concerned about Czech plans to expand the Temelí nuclear power station in South Bohemia. MP Václav Klaus Jr., who was recently expelled from the Civic Democrats, will remain the chairman of the Lower House's Education Committee. The committee's members rejected the party's nominee to replace Mr. Klaus Martin Baksa in a vote on Wednesday. Under an agreement on the division of posts in the current Chamber of Deputies, the chairmanship of the Education Committee belongs to the Civic Democrats. The party's leader, Petr Fiala, said the situation represented a break with custom in the lower house. Bark beetle infestations in the Czech Republic are likely to get worse, experts from the Czech Agricultural University said at a news conference. In a report, the scientists said that such infestations have been isolated in the past, but would appear in synchronized form on large territories in the future. The university's Tomáš Hlasný said intervention would need to be targeted at areas where it could prove effective. In some places, harvesting infected trees is not economically efficient, he said. Seven of the country's 14 regions are currently suffering infestations. The problem was at its highest level in two centuries last year. The Ministry of Education, Youth and Sports will not support the Czech Republic's Motorcycle Grand Prix in Brno this year, Czech TV reported. Officials say the organisers didn't fulfil the necessary conditions to receive state funding. The organisers are already suing the ministry over the fact that last year they received 30 million crowns in funding rather than the 100 million they had applied for. Finally, the weather forecast. Thursday should be largely bright in the Czech Republic, with temperatures of up to 17 degrees Celsius. Daytime highs in the mid-teens Celsius are also expected in the following days, and there will be the chance of rain. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's programme, a 50 million crown foreign investment scheme opens up to Czech businesses, and British inventor Richard Browning demonstrates his flying suit in Prague. Later on, Vít Pohanka will take you to the pilgrimage church of St. John of Nepomuk in Šťár. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Czech companies doing business in high-risk markets will now be able to apply for up to 25 million crowns in funding thanks to a new foreign ministry scheme unveiled on Tuesday. It says the plan is the first of its kind in Central Europe and follows the EU's shift in focus from foreign aid to investment, Tom McEncrow reports.
On Tuesday, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, inspired by a Europe-wide shift to support developing countries through investment rather than funding, unveiled its Záruka zahraniční rozvojové spolupráce project, which can be roughly translated as Foreign Development Cooperation Guarantee. The scheme is aimed at all states on the OECD's official development list, which is made up of more than 100 countries worldwide that rank as low or middle-income economies. Martin Tlapa is the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs responsible for economic and development cooperation. He says that the project is the first of its kind in Central and Eastern Europe.
We decided to follow what is discussed on the European level about how to be efficient in developing cooperation in developing countries. And the consensus is to move from just giving the money to invest the money to difficult regions like Africa and some countries in Asia. So this is something which was decided on the government level last year, and we prepared a program following this direction, which is really quite new among the neighboring countries in Central Europe.
The push to move from development contributions to more direct investment in promising businesses has been present in Brussels discussions since the migration crisis and is particularly relevant in regards to the African continent, where EU officials hope to create 10 million jobs in the next 5 years. The Foreign Ministry's scheme seeks to simplify and increase the availability of projects offered by Czech commercial banks to Czech companies seeking to do business in high-risk markets. A total of 50 million crowns has been committed to the plan, with the maximum available withdrawable amount for a single investment lying at 25 million crowns. The length of liability lies at 8 years, and the guarantee can fund up to 50% of the investment. The project is currently aimed at Czech companies, with local businesses in developing states unable to apply. However, Mr. Tlapa says that this is the first phase of a project which, if successful, could be further adjusted to fit demand.
At the beginning, the condition is to apply for the companies in the Czech Republic. So this is the tool which with the pilot project is focused on the Czech companies which are considering investment into in the developing countries. So that's the first phase. We will see how it will be the strong demand for that. We will be flexible in adjusting all parameters of the program based on the demands and following the discussion we have on European level on that.
He says that if commercial banks provide enough interest, the budget for the next phase could be expanded beyond 50 million crowns. All business ventures can apply, but the Deputy Foreign Minister believes that businesses focused on agriculture, healthcare and water management have a particularly strong chance.
In sectors like healthcare, medical equipment, medical devices, the group of the Czech companies is very competitive. Traditionally, for important part of our cooperation in Africa is agriculture technology, processing food, and the second one is water management, water cleaning water and waste management. This is the third important sector. So it should be different based on the demands, but generally these sectors are considerably strong on the list of the companies interested in the project.
The ministry is conducting a study aimed at identifying the sectors where Czech companies are most competitive in Asia and Africa, something that could also be used as a selection measure, says Mr. Tlapa. The project is to be announced on April 8th. Businesses can submit applications on a running basis, and Mr. Tlapa says their requests featuring a strong business plan and an established base in the target country could secure the funds by the end of the year. After a press conference, the Deputy Foreign Minister and his aides attended a consultation meeting with representatives of Czech business and the commercial banking sector. Some of those present brought up the fact that many Czech companies ask for loans directly through their local branches in the respective countries, whereas the Foreign Minister's plan only counts on investment guarantees being paid out to the company's main Czech branches. This, according to some commercial bankers, could slow down the speed with which money reaches the businesses. However, Mr. Tlapa says that in this initial stage of the project, focus will remain on core businesses.
Of course, some banks are, you know, willing to be more ambitious with the projects and considering to finance the branches of the Czech companies abroad and all through their branches of the banks in other countries. So, which is perfect. I love the discussion, but I'm just saying we are at the beginning. Let's start with the core business and with checking the success on the Czech side, and we will continue. Don't forget, we have a problem of the amount of how much the companies are ready and willing and invest in difficult countries in Africa. So this is the first step, and if it's a success, definitely the government, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, will be keen to have the plans with higher allocation of the money for that.
Deputy Foreign Minister Martin Tlapa ending that report by Tom McEncrow. Moving on now, people walking along the banks of the Vltava River on Tuesday were treated to the unbelievable sight of a man flying over the river. The man wearing a jet suit was British inventor Richard Browning, known as the real-life Iron Man, who came to the Czech capital to demonstrate his latest invention. Ruth Frankova has the story.
Richard Browning's stunning flight took place outside Prague's Joffin Palace on Tuesday in front of a large crowd of onlookers. Mr. Browning, dressed in his body-controlled jet engine power suit called Daedalus, rose above the Slovansky island Chetty, flew down the river and below the Legion's Bridge. This is what he had to say to Czech radio right after he landed.
The ducks was new, yes, I've never flown alongside ducks before, that was quite fun. Yeah, it was great. In a small area like that, it was really fun to have, you know, flying under a bridge and, I mean, the pedalos, it was quite funny. When actually chasing the ducks, I did get kind of carried away chasing the ducks.
The British inventor and entrepreneur was one of the guests at this year's Singularity U Summit on Prague's Joffin Island, which brings together visionaries from all around the world. Browning has already made around 70 similar demonstration flights all around the world. He told Czech radio that he was glad his Czech premiere went smoothly.
Any event where I don't go for a swim or fall over or fail to start is a good event.
Browning, an ex-Royal Marine reservist and a former commodity trader, founded a startup called Gravity Industries in March 2017 with a dream to invent an entirely new form of human flight. The Daedalus suit uses several miniature jet engines to achieve vertical flight. It can reach a speed of 32 miles per hour and ascend to altitudes of 12,000 feet. Mr. Browning uses his arms to control the direction and speed of the flight.
You are absolutely, completely three-dimensionally free. You can move in any direction at almost any speed just by thinking where you're going to go. I mean, it sounds ludicrous, but that, if you think about it, is what you do with a bicycle. You don't think about leaning into a corner or anything like that. You just look at where you want to go and go there. And it's the same as this, but in three dimensions.
The British inventor is now planning to launch a racing series using his jet-powered flight.
I'd like to think that that was a small showcase example of what it would be like. Imagine not just me doing it, but another three pilots all racing each other around in obstacles and under bridges and things. That's really what we're aiming to achieve. And we've got several pilots and several other jet suits, and that's what we're going to be doing for the rest of the year, alongside other events and things.
British inventor Richard Browning speaking there to Czech radio in Prague. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time to go places with Vít Pohanka.
For nearly 300 years, this bell has been calling Catholics to the pilgrimage church of St. John of Nepomuk. Built on a small hill called Zelená Hora near Žďár nad Sázavou, it is one of the most spectacular and yet unassuming sites in the Czech Republic. The architectural significance of the church on the border of the historic lands of Bohemia and Moravia was officially recognized by UNESCO in 1994 when it became the third site in the country to be included in the World Heritage List, preceded only by Prague and the city of Telč.
And here you can see the main platform of the five-pointed star, which is better seen with...
My guide today is a young student, Vojtěch, or Vojta Kabrda, and he's just brimming with enthusiasm for this place.
It's so unique when you have the first look at it. It does not look like any other church you can see in our country, because the shapes are just so weird, I would say, that you can't help but look at it, because, you know, it is all based on the symbolism of number five and the structure of five-pointed star, and actually the stars themselves. And so the first thing you see when you look at it is that it does not look like anything you've seen so far.
Yes, the church really is unique. Not in its size as much as its shapes and the space it creates. And probably the best way to appreciate its singularity starts elsewhere, in the New Generation Museum, just a few hundred meters away, under the hill. You cannot really miss it as you go past it, whether you come by car or by local transport from the railway station. The prize-winning exposition presents the story not only of the church itself, it goes much further. It uses multimedia and state-of-the-art interactive displays to one single purpose: to tell the story of the Cistercian Abbey, which started here in the 13th century. I was allowed to use some of the following audio excerpts, courtesy of the museum. The fascinating journey through time starts with the words of the first chronicler of the Abbey, Jindřich Řezbář, in English, Henry the Carver.
The Latin Chronica Domus Sorensis. I wrote it on 67 sheets of parchment in 1300. I signed it in Latin as Henricus. I was the last to remember everything. And what I didn't recall, others told me, starting from the beginning of the monastery to the end of the 13th century.
The Cistercians were sometimes referred to also as the white monks because of the white robes they wore. They put emphasis on manual labor and self-sufficiency. Their abbeys supported themselves through agriculture, forestry, and yes, they brewed sometimes excellent ales. But first and foremost, they lived their lives combining hard work and worship in connection with the surrounding nature. And they tended to ask for this simplicity to be projected in their churches and other places of worship.
We wanted neither gold nor precious stones, nor paintings nor embroidered robes. Instead of stained glass windows, we opted simply for pure glass.
Fast forward some 400 years. It is the beginning of the 18th century. The Cistercians in Žďár managed to keep their traditional outlook throughout many turbulent times. But they also started to mix this original simplicity with some more complex ideas. Now in comes the extraordinary abbot Václav or Venceslas Vejmluva. Man of humble origin, but great creative ambition, says my guide Vojta Kabrda.
He was born in Brno as a son of an ale brewer. But even though he was quite lowborn, he got a lot of studies and he was,
he was well educated.
Exactly. So in a year of 1705, he was voted or elected an abbot here in local monastery. And then the main works started, because he invited a lot of artists to this area, a lot of sculptors, painters, and most importantly, the architect himself, Santini.
The abbot and the architect quickly became what you might call spiritual buddies.
It is told that he invited him only for reconstructions of the local organ, but they quickly became friends. The first thing he built for Vejmluva, apart from reconstruction of the monastery and basilic, was local agricultural building called Lyre, which is building basically built on a platform of the antique Greek instrument musical, you know, the lyre. Mm-hmm. And the building itself carries some of the similarities with the musical instrument.
So it was only natural that when Abbot Vejmluva decided to build a pilgrimage church for one of the new Czech saints, John of Nepomuk, somewhere in the vicinity of the abbey, he turned to Jan Blažej Santini to design it. What remained was the decision where exactly the church should be raised. And here the abbot's eyes fell on a nearby hill called by the locals with some exaggeration Zelená hora, the Green Mountain.
I said to myself, where will everyone praise the Creator? High up on a mountain, because God summoned Abraham to him on the mountain to sacrifice his son Isaac. On another mountain, Mount Sinai, God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. So I said to myself, we'll do the same. The journey from below, from the monastery, via Zelena Hora, leads all the way to heaven.
But what should the church actually look like? Both men, Vejmluva and Santini, drew inspiration from the Cistercian tradition of uniting seemingly contradictory principles of simplicity and complexity, but also closeness to nature and universe. What's more, they both believed in Christian Kabbalah, a school of thought with roots in Jewish mysticism. Here is a brief introduction by the way of imaginary dialogue of the two men, enacted in the Museum of New Generation.
The sacred books of Kabbalah. There are many of them in the church back in our day. According to Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism, all human wisdom is hidden in the symbolism of either numbers or letters. Each sign points to a spiritual essence, and this, it brings us back to reading using sign language.
It's simple. Five is the basis. The five groups of five. From this, we derive a circle. The intersections determine a star. That's the basis. We copy 10 circles around the middle. It's clear. Everything's clear. By intersecting the segments, we get the geometry of five niches. The tops of five segments lay on base circle B. We draw up a network of auxiliary circles here, here. By intersecting the segments, we get the outer geometry of the three staircases here. Then the outer geometry gives large niches here. The geometry of the basic star determines the epicenters of the ellipses. The auxiliary circles determine the centers and dimensions of the ellipses. The geometry written into the stars and segments of the staircases determines the shape of the five 12-foot stars in the apses. The basic star determines the circumferential pentagon and decagon. By intersecting the segments, we get the geometry of the gallery and the ceiling.
Enough about the spiritual and intellectual sources of inspiration for the church. If you are by now getting a little bit lost in all the words, numbers, and geometric shapes, don't worry. After all, what really matters is the resulting building. And believe me, it never ceases to impress and at the same time somehow provoke visitors, whichever part of the world they come from.
What kind of strikes me is that it's got this kind of Baroque feeling. But yes. At the same time, when you look at the windows, I mean, they are Gothic, aren't they?
Yeah, well, that's because of Santini himself, because he himself created this style, architecture style. In Czech, it is barokní gotika or gotizující baroko, which is like basically combination of Baroque and Gothic styles. And it's because he didn't want to build in any of those styles. He was architect out of his time, out of his, place. So he decided to change the things. He decided to do it differently. And I think it worked. It may be connected even with his main inspiration, which was Italian architect Francesco Borromini. He built about half of Rome, quotation marks. But many of the people of the time in which he was building believed him to be like madman, like crazy. So he was even nicknamed like madman or something like that. So Santini, his main inspiration was this architect, this one man who was out of his time. Needless to say that Santini's works were accepted better than Borromini's works. Santini, he was praised for his work.
And similar unity in architectural diversity catches your eye once inside the building.
The two floors what we have here are completely different. The first floor is Gothic because you can see straight, clear lines, the Gothic arches and the original decoration, which is resembling Gothic style as well. But the Baroque style that is one floor higher is about something completely different. While the Gothic building tried to adore the god, the Baroque people did not really try to adore the god, but they wanted to understand him. So in the building itself, they follow three main aspects of the Baroque style. The first aspect is aspect of life, which is basically the greatest gift that God has given us. That's how they thought. So the life is hidden in the leaves that circle around the handrail on the second floor. And the nod to life is connected with the second aspect of Baroque style, which is movement. And the movement we can see on statues in the church, because they are supposed to be visualized as vital as possible.
Kind of dynamic, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's the word. So apparently they should feel like they were frozen in time and you were able to look at them out of the time and out of the space. And the last and most important aspect of Baroque style is the light. Baroque people believed that God is hidden in the light, and throughout the light he sees us and he looks upon us. So the light was usually used very symbolically in Baroque churches, that it shows only some part of the church, that it enlightens some part of maybe altar or something like that. But Santini wanted to do it completely differently. He wanted you to feel like you are not surrounded by mass or matter in this church, but by the light itself. Enlightenment of the church was finished by the main altar, because if you look at the main altar now, you can see St. John of Nepomuk, who has like a gray / orange face. And there is like a big curtain, which is dark green, and St. John stands on a black globe. It was not black, but silver. So when the light actually shone into the church, there was so much more light than nowadays. But it does not matter, because even though there is not as much light as Santini wanted, there is still a lot more light than in a lot of other churches.
In a way, Vojta Kabrda, my enthusiastic young guide, summed it up best. The main reason why I come and see the pilgrimage church of St. John of Nepomuk in Zjarna Cazavo is as simple as that. It has a lot more to offer than many other churches combined.
Pete Pohanka reporting there, and I'm afraid that's all from us for now. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you as always. And of course, you can follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. This is Daniela Zarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.